Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. We first brought you Richie's story in March of 2020. To refresh your memory, we'll play the original episode first, with an update with a new interview after. We've cut down the original episode slightly for the sake of time. If you'd like to hear the full original episode, scroll through the episodes back to March 2, 2020. If you remember this story well, you can fast forward to about the 57-minute mark where the update begins.
The week after I found out, me and my fiance went to Colonial Creek Campground and camped there, and I printed off 200 flyers. I put them everywhere, gas stations, the closest gas stations. I put them in the bear cages at the campground. Like, I put them everywhere. And I've talked to 5 rangers when I was up there, and the 2 that I talked to that were at the New Halem Ranger Station, super nice, and they literally took time to answer any of my questions.
How hard it is to find somebody. It's amazing. The vast majority of cases are rescue. Overwhelming anymore. I think the search, a true missing person case, is becoming more rare than it used to be, just with the advent of people having better navigation tools like GPS and stuff like that. I think in general and broad sweeping turns in wilderness search, the idea that people get lost at a trail junction, right, and turn the wrong way, that seems like in the beginning of my career, that was a little more prevalent than it is these days, anyway.
58-year-old Richie Collins went missing in early 2019. The exact date of his disappearance is currently unknown. A neighbor reported seeing him at his home in Bellingham, Washington. But the exact date on that is fuzzy. Richie had not texted or spoken to family members since March of 2019. He's been described by those who knew him best as a loner, so it would not be uncommon for a few days or even weeks to go by without hearing from him. Richie's family had been trying to get a hold of him for weeks, but then, on April 30th, Richie's car was found parked at the Colonial Creek Campground at North Cascades National Park. The keys to his car had been placed on top of the vehicle, and according to park rangers, the vehicle had been there for weeks. The park where Richie's car was located is filled with trails that stretch for seemingly endless miles. So far, after extensive searches, no sign of Richie has been found. When authorities later searched Richie's residence, they found no signs of a struggle. They also found that Richie had a large collection of survival items, such as gear and non-perishable foods. Richie was known for always being prepared for a disaster at any moment. The only significant thing missing from Richie's home, besides Richie himself, was his large gun collection, which to his family makes no sense. So what happened to Richie Collins in early 2019? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 214 of The Vanished, Richie Collins' story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Richie's story is a baffling mystery. In order to get a better understanding of what may have happened to him, we wanted to learn more about who Richie was as a person. For this story, we were able to speak to Richie's sister, Bonnie. Here's Bonnie telling us about her brother.
There were three of us. Richie was the oldest. I was the middle. Randy was the youngest. Our parents separated when we were young. And we lived with our grandmother until there's 2 years between me and Rich. And then a year between me and Randy. And so when I was about 9, we moved back with our dad to St. Louis and went to school there. Richie graduated first. He'd always wanted to be in the military. He always loved the Army, played Army. When we were kids, my dad, when we were little, got the boys a little uniform apiece. He'd wear that thing till it wore out. He played this game called Risk, and it was strategic, taking over of countries, and he was so good at that. You know, he won every game with all of us. We couldn't beat him. And, you know, that's how he was. He excelled. He really was very, very smart. And, I mean, that was his dream, to go into the Army. And so at 17, he got recruited into the Army. He went into the Airborne first and then Delta Force. He just loved it, and he excelled, and he did very well in it. And he spent 23 years in the Army. And then when he retired in 2000, he went into border security at the Border Patrol up there in Washington at the port. And he was very, very good. And I didn't realize, honestly, how good he was at what he did. But he was. He has all kinds of awards. He's got the Silver Star. He's got 2 Bronze Stars, tons of medals. So, I mean, this is a guy who was very, very, very intelligent. And he is a thinker, a critical thinker. He thinks ahead. He takes everything in consideration.
We asked Bonnie if she could tell us more about Richie's personality.
He was a very quiet person and a private person, if we would call each other, and we did often, and that's how I realized he was missing. We talked about books, and we talked about movies, and we had the same political ideas, and that's what we talked about. You know, if he would write us from Desert Storm or whatever, I looked at all the letters, and it was just, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, I'm doing good. It's really hot here. It's really cold here, whatever. I think a lot of that was because he didn't want us to worry. He always talked about how much he loved what he did. And he was married in 1988, I believe. But he only stayed married for 3 years because the Army is horrible on a marriage. And so the marriage didn't last. They had a child, Britton, and he loved her. I mean, he really loved his child. That's why he settled in Washington close to them, you know, when he got out of the military. He loved the, I guess, adventure and the travel and the structure of the military. He had a lot of friends up there in the Border Patrol. There were several different people that had contacted me and worried about him and asked him what they can do, and because nobody knows what happened to him. And here's the thing. Richie was very methodical. When I was looking through his stuff, everything was in a file. Everything was neat. But everything stopped in 2013. There was hardly anything past that, which is so odd and so strange. When we talked November the 24th, 2018, his plans were he was taking some college courses. That's what he did after he got out of the Border Patrol in 2013. And he said that it was starting to burn him out a little bit. He wasn't really enjoying it, and he decided to get out. Britton says she found stuff saying that he was trying to get back in, either the Border Patrol or contract back overseas. but he'd had a 5-year cooling off period or whatever, and I think he's just bored. But he told me that in this summer, which was 2019, that he was going to go to Washington, D.C. to a school, and it was a forensic school for, like, computers and phones and stuff to hack into those, because he was really into the terrorism stuff. I guess overseas, that was a big thing with them. He took a lot of courses on that. And so, you know, when you're 58, it's hard to get a job. So the more knowledgeable you are, if you can bring all that to the table, it's easier to get a government job. That's what his ultimate goal was.
Since Richie was known to be more of a loner, he wasn't the kind of person who was in constant contact with those close to him. This can make it harder to pinpoint exactly when someone went missing. Bonnie told us that in April of 2019, she became concerned about her brother.
On April the 4th, I called his number, which I always called. If he didn't answer right then, he would answer within the next 5 minutes, for sure. And this guy answers the phone, and he says, yeah. And I said, he's Rich? And he said, there's no Rich here. And immediately, I got a horrible, horrible feeling. I mean, I thought I was going to throw up. So I called my cousin, Terry Lynn, and I asked him, have you heard from Rich? Because they're really close. And he said, no, not in a while. And I told him what happened, and he said, now that's weird. And I compared numbers, and it was the same. And so I said, okay, well, let me call my brother, little brother Randy, and see if he's heard from me. So I called him, and he's like, no. And I said, Randy, something's wrong. And he said, well, let me call that guy and see what he's got to say. So Randy called this person back, and the guy said, I've had this phone number for 4 days. We're like, okay. Well, we knew immediately something was wrong, because my brother, Randy, said that he had called Richie in on Christmas 2018 and New Year's 2019. And he didn't respond back to him. And that was very odd. So April the 4th, for whatever reason, I thought, man, it's been way long since I talked to him. I want to talk to him. I called Randy back and I said, Randy, I got a bad feeling. He said, well, do you want me to call up there? And I said, would you? I can't bear to do it. I just can't. Something's wrong. And he says, okay.
This is when Richie's siblings jumped into action. They contacted the local police department and requested that they do a welfare check.
So he called up there and got a Officer Nelson, and he told them we wanted to do a welfare check, that we thought our brother was missing. They took all that down, and supposedly they went out to the house. They knocked on the door. Nobody answered. They seen a neighbor, and the neighbor said, oh, yeah, I seen him about 4 days ago. And so, therefore, he was no longer a missing person. They come back, and they told Randy that everything was in order and that they knocked on the door, but he wasn't there, and there was no vehicle there. And the neighbor lady had said that she'd seen him 4 days ago walk out towards his car, and that was the last she'd seen him. They said, try every means to find him. Do email, do Facebook. So I'd gotten on his Facebook, and the last time that he posted was November the 29th, anything. He was posting every day. A lot of it was about soldiers and things like that. For somebody to go from posting like every day to nothing. And the same thing with, you know, I talked to him on November the 24th was the last time we actually had a conversation. And my husband was really struggling then. My husband has terminal cancer. He was very, very, very ill. And that occupied most of my brain and my... And to be honest, me and Richie always called each other at least every 2 months. But most of the time it's every month. And a lot of times it was even in between that. And he told me, he promised me he'd call me every 2 weeks. Well, Christmas come up and this and that and whatever, and you kind of get, you know... I thought 100 times about calling him from then till April, and just something always got in the way. We had so many doctor visits.
Bonnie exhausted all the ways she could think of contacting her brother. After several days with no response from Richie, she decided it was time to call the police again.
April the 8th, I couldn't wait any longer. They said, wait for 7 days, and then if you're still missing, we'll do a missing persons thing. On April the 8th, I called them back, and I said, you know, I want to report my brother missing. And they said, well, what makes you think he's missing? And I told them. And they said, well, tell us a little bit about your brother. And I said, well, I think he's been missing for a while. I think he's been missing maybe since November. Drives the element. I said, he worked for the Border Patrol. He's not working for them anymore that I know of. He's not made any contact with us. And I said, I've sent a letter. I checked his email. I've contacted all of his people on Facebook, and the ones that responded back to me hadn't heard from him in a while. I said, he's had no contact with family. That's really odd because there's been birthdays and anniversaries that he never failed to send an email or send a Facebook, happy birthday. My son's death was in there, never called me, which that alerted me. That was February the 1st. Like I said, we had a lot going on. He says, okay. He says, give me a little bit and we'll go check it out. So an hour later, he calls me back and he said, well, we knocked on the door. He said, everything's in place. There was no answer again. And he said, but we talked to the neighbor lady, and she said that she seen him about 4 days ago, and he had on a Border Patrol uniform and a sidearm, went and got in his element and drove away. And I said, well, a red flag, Richie hasn't worked for the Border Patrol. It's been at least 5 years is what I said. And I said, that don't sound right. I said, and not to contact anybody, that don't sound right. He said, well, you know, he's not missing at this point because the neighbor lady said she'd seen him 4 days ago. And I'm thinking, this is exactly what they told us before. I mean, they haven't made contact with him. You know, welfare check should be when they make contact, not when the neighbor lady says she's seen him 4 days. She's saying she's seen him 4 days ago. I didn't know what to do. So I thought I'd wait a little bit and try again.
Little did Bonnie know, within a few weeks, there would be a major break in the case, a break that would lead them to finally investigate Richie as a missing person. Rangers at the North Cascades National Park reported that Richie's Honda Element had been abandoned there.
Well, on April 30th, because that's when the car abandoned with key on top of it. From there, then they started taking that he was missing serious. I mean, Richie worked for that car, and there's no way he would just, that was his transportation. So what's it doing 82 miles away from where he lives with the key on top of it? So I asked the police if they were going to process it. And I asked what the condition of the car was, the inside. I said, because Richie don't drink and he don't smoke. And he wouldn't allow anybody in his car doing that. They said, well, everything was fine. And he said, there was a wrapper. I said, what kind of a wrapper? He said, like a meat wrapper, like a Braunschweiger or something like that. And I remember my dad used to love that, but I don't know that Richie did. Maybe he did. I don't know. I said, is there trash cans around? They said, yeah, we're just right, you know, real close. I said, he'd never leave a wrapper in his vehicle. He just wouldn't do it. He wasn't that way. I said, so there's nothing else? And they said, no. Well, when my nephew went there in June to get the car, because it has been there at the National Park, it had been there since April. The wildlife officer, see, they told us, this is where they're getting their timeline, that car had been there about 2 weeks, and this is April the 30th, so 2 weeks prior to that. Well, the wildlife officer said, no, that car has been there a lot longer. She said, because when I come up, it had been here for at least a month, maybe two, longer than what they're saying. So it's so difficult to pin down a timeline of when he actually went missing. When my nephew looked in the car, there was a map case laying on the seat open to that area. In the glove compartment box, there was a pair of surgical gloves with a box cutter open on top of it. in the glove compartment for the back, there was a gas receipt for in February. These are things the cops never even was interested in. You know, it makes no sense to me. I'm having red flags going off. You know, this is not my brother. My brother would never do this. He was very meticulous.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After Richie's car was found at the Colonial Creek Campground inside the North Cascades National Park, investigators searched Richie's home. Afterwards, they called Bonnie to tell her what they had found.
They said there was nothing out of sorts in the house. No sign of a crime, no sign of that something could have happened there. No blood, no nothing like that. So I'm like, okay. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, Richie had a bunch of guns, and I mean a bunch of guns. And he said, okay. And I said, well, were they in the house? And he said, no. And I said, what? And he said, his safe was open. I said, what? He's got a big safe, gun safe. And it was open. It was pried open. And the house was a disaster. Now, my brother was very, very neat. I mean, that was just his, you know, you be in the Army for 23 years, they teach you to be neat. And then the house was utter chaos. There was stuff tossed. We've got pictures of all that. Now, whether the police did it, I don't know, because we were in there after they went in there to look. But I don't know why they would do that. It was weird because there was, like, no food in the house. Other than Richie was with FEMA and all that stuff, emergency management. And he had, like, the survival food and stuff like that. They said, oh, yeah, it was full of survival stuff. Well, it was, because he trained for all that.
Once authorities were involved in the case, Bonnie felt like they weren't taking her brother's disappearance as seriously as they should.
So they said that there was going to be a detective assigned to the case, which was Officer Gates. And he came aboard, and he was, like, very short with me. Because at this time, I was the only one dealing with them. Brandy had bailed. Brittany didn't know about it because, and I feel so bad about this, I wanted to reach out to her and let them know. Well, I was told by the detective that this was an investigation and for me to wait until they interviewed them first. Now, this is in June. And so I was like, okay. Well, I was calling every week, sometimes two and three times a week. He'd never get back to me. It was very difficult. Well, at the end of August, I finally got a hold of him. And it's kind of like when you call their number and they answer, you're shocked. He was supposed to be a high-profile case. That's all we heard for 3 months there, June, July, and August. Well, it was true. It was that 30-year girl that had been murdered, and they finally found the killer. He was involved in that case, which gave me hope because I was thinking, well, you know what? He may be the guy we need because, you know, they busted that case open. During our conversation, constantly I was like, is he in the missing persons national database or not? Well, yeah. Well, no. Well, yeah. No. Well, no. I never could get a straight answer. He said, well, we're not just on Richie's case. He said, we've got 10 open cases in Whatcom County.
At one point, Bonnie contacted Detective Gates to ask if he had spoken to Richie's ex-wife and daughter. She was told that they had not yet been notified. Fearing that they would see something about it on the news or social media, Bonnie decided it was time to reach out herself. She spoke to Richie's ex-wife, who would eventually tell her daughter, Brittany.
She wanted to tell Brittany personally, which I don't blame her, and it devastated that girl. I mean, and so since then, the three of us have been working together to try to do what we can.
Brittany, Richie's daughter, graciously spoke with us about her father. She told us about her relationship with Richie growing up.
My parents, they divorced when I was around 1 year old. My dad never had like custody of me, and he was in the Army, so he always deployed, and he worked for Border Patrol. So really, it was just my mom that raised me. But he did take me to Disney World. He took me to visit family in Arkansas. And so I have really good memories with him. And then in middle school, I stayed with him every other weekend for like a year because he lived right by my school. But other than that, we didn't really have a relationship. I just would write him, he would write me like happy birthday cards and stuff like that.
Brittany told us that she has faced many struggles in her own life and how her father had helped her.
I knew like at a very young age that I was transgender. However, back in the day, we didn't know much about it. And so we didn't even know really what the word transgender meant. I internalized a lot of that, and that manifested through an eating disorder really bad. And then I started getting into drugs in middle school, and it got worse and worse. And I got expelled from high school my beginning of my sophomore year. And I just went down a really dark path. And made really bad choices and was really into drugs. So my parents, they sent me to rehab 5 times before I turned 18. The last time I went to rehab, I was clean for like 6 months. And my dad actually, this was the last time I physically saw my dad. I was 17 years old. And we went and visited my family in Arkansas, my Aunt Bonnie, my cousins, my Uncle Bill. And we stayed at their motel that they owned at the time. And it was great at the time of my life. But that's the last time I physically saw my dad. After that, I started doing drugs again. When I was 18, I moved down to Houston, Texas. I lived there for 5 years. And I met a guy down there. He was just really controlling and abusive. My dad, I had reached out to him. And he was sending me money. I think I was 21 or 22 at this point. And my dad would send me money so I could get like a hotel room and have somewhere to sleep at night. And eventually took some of that money and we got an apartment. Well, the first night that we moved in there, he put my head through the wall and I fled back to Seattle. I got on a plane and went back home. I was really messed up from all the domestic violence and just everything that I'd gone through. In 2015, I went to rehab, and I've been clean ever since. When I got clean, you know, part of doing that is cleaning up the wreckage of your past and all the destruction and just, I think I was such a damaged person that honestly, I had to really focus on myself. And it had always been on my mind, and I would talk to people about reaching out to my dad and rebuilding our relationship or starting it or whatever, but it just never happened. I think I was scared because he didn't know I was transgender. I didn't tell him until my early 20s, I think, and I hadn't seen him since then, so it was just scary. I was really scared. I didn't know what he was going to say, but I mean, he didn't really say anything. He just wasn't like a talkative person or like about your feelings.
Brittany only saw her father sporadically over the years, so Brittany wasn't immediately aware that anything was amiss. She told us about how her mother told her that Richie was missing.
So my mom had texted me and invited me to go to lunch with her. And when I met up with her, she told me some other bad news. And then she told me, I have something else to tell you. She said, your dad's missing. And she told me everything. And I just cried. I just felt sad. I felt, obviously you're in shock, but your mind starts racing. And I just felt like whatever happened, it's sad in any way that he didn't have anyone that knew. No one's been trying to really help that much. It's just sad.
Brittany has been to Richie's home on several occasions to search it, hoping to find something new. She told us that she never knew her dad to be a survivalist, so she was shocked by what she found.
So I never knew my dad to be like this, but through going through all of this stuff, he had tons of books about emergency disasters, if we were attacked by a different country or like extreme situations like that. I mean, that's what he went to school and that's kind of what he was working on too, is emergency disaster. That's what he did. So when I searched his house, I mean, there is, I don't know what you call it, but like this thing he was building to like camouflage, to hide behind. He had 2-liter bottles full of water all in crates underneath his bed and in the closet. Survival seeds. All he had in his fridge was survival seeds and a canteen of water. He had tons of like military sleeping bags. There's a sleeping bag that was on his bedroom door, like hanging on it. He had laundry still in the dryer, like he'd just done laundry. And he had knives and ammo and guns. It's just crazy. I mean, binoculars, scope, a big tub of ammo. There was canned food, dried food in the cupboards. That was it. And then his last transaction was at a grocery store, and I found receipts, and he bought like lunch meat and stuff like that and fruits and vegetables. So I found a big box of like a big tub. I don't know how many gallons, but it was huge, full of ammo. But my aunt said that he usually kept way more ammo than that, and a lot of it's missing. That's what my aunt said. Yeah, she said at least 1,000 rounds of gun. Yeah, and there was a lot there. So I can't even imagine how much more. And when I met with Gates, I talked to him because a big thing is about the guns, obviously, and about them being registered or pawned or anything like that. And what he said was, from what I gather from my aunt and from him, is he had around 15 pistols and 20 rifles, and that the pistols were all registered. But the rifle, he made himself through different parts, and you don't have to register those. There's no evidence of a crime, so they haven't taken fingerprints or anything. His safe at his condo was open when the detectives went there, and there were pry marks on it, but they said that they looked like pry marks that my dad did himself, like getting into it. Like, it didn't look like someone broke into it. He had at least 35 guns missing. She said that my uncle went up there a couple of years ago. Like 2 years ago, and said when he visited, my dad was pulling guns out of everywhere, from under his bed, everywhere. And that he has like family heirloom guns and really expensive guns. That's what my aunt's been saying. He had to have gotten rid of them. They were stolen. He hid them or something. I don't know. And they don't have all the serial numbers on them either, but they have checked like pawn shops and stuff. Some of the ammo I found was like for heavy duty stuff.
Some other odd things that Brittany noticed during her searches of Richie's townhome included women's toiletries in the bathroom, and the spare bedroom had bedding that looked feminine, which is unlike other decor in Richie's home. Brittany doesn't think that these were items he would have purchased. Was there a woman staying at Richie's home? If so, no one has any idea who that would be. A couple of other strange things that she noticed included a gallon of bleach on the kitchen counter and an entire crock pot in the dishwasher, including the part you aren't supposed to submerge in water. He also had several forms of identification on the kitchen counter.
I mean, there was papers lined up all over the kitchen counter. Someone looked through it. All of his IDs and credit cards and older credit cards, I would say expired, and his passport and stuff like that. Army identifications, they're like all older ones.
Bonnie touched on Richie's car briefly, and she also spoke about how meticulous her brother was. However, Brittany had more information to give us regarding what was found inside Richie's vehicle.
It was a mess. It was messy. And my dad's not like that. And that there was bird nests or animal nests in the engine. The inside of the car, like around the floor, was moldy. There was a map of, I believe, the Cascade Mountains opened on the passenger seat. In the glove box, there's a note for a coworker of his to drive his car across the Canadian border. I gave her permission. There were surgical gloves and a razor blade in the glove box. And then the car was also found with the driver's seat pushed close to the steering wheel like someone short was driving it.
One mystery of Richie's disappearance is that he had owned many guns. It's believed that 30 or more guns are missing along with Richie. The sheer amount of weapons would be so much for him to transport. No one believes that he just walked into the wilderness with all of that. Bonnie told us more about her thoughts on the missing guns.
Well, and then the car being abandoned, so how would he carry all that stuff? And his car was a little Honda Element. So he couldn't have carried all the stuff in one trip anyway. And here's another thing. The seat, when my nephew went to go get the car that had been abandoned, yeah, it was all the way up to the front. Like a short, very short person had been in there. We tried to look at the GPS. It's an older one, and it didn't keep a history. So I took it to a computer friend of mine, and he said, there's no history. He called the manufacturer, and that particular one didn't. So you see, everything we've thought of and we've tried to look at, is it, we've come to a blank wall. We have no clue, none.
Another mystery of this case is when exactly Richie disappeared. His family has been trying to backtrack and see if they could find any trace of him. Bonnie believes he disappeared sometime between March 11th and March 20th. She told us why.
The 11th of March is when supposedly a friend of his had got his last email. Or not email, but a messenger, saying he was fine and blah, 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 blah. The 20th, they got a hellacious snowstorm, and it was a lot of snow. There's no way that car could have got there after that. There's no way. And the park didn't open until April, and the car was already there.
Brittany told us that this friend that Richie had spoken to on the 11th has other connections to her father.
In the beginning, my dad was getting mail sent to his house that had a woman's name and two guys' names. Well, we find out the woman is his coworker at Border Patrol when he worked there, and that the two guys' names were her sons, and that she was using his address as her mailing address because she is from or lives in Vancouver in Canada. So my aunt told me that Phoebe was the last person to talk to my dad, and that he seemed very negative, this is direct quote, very negative and out of sorts. And so apparently they arranged for my dad to check in with her every Monday. And the following Monday, she never heard anything.
Brittany mentioned earlier that there was a note in Richie's car giving permission to a coworker to take his car across the Canadian border. This was the same coworker who had been receiving mail at Richie's home, and the last person he had sent a text message to. Brittany told us how she was able to track down Richie's last financial transactions.
when I was appointed temporary trustee, I was able to go to Bank of America with the court order, and they weren't able to show me anything but his transactions. And it was February 11th. He went to a gas station in Bellingham and Winco, which is a food store. And then I believe, I don't remember the exact date, but it was like March, early March, like the first week of March. He manually paid a payment to USAA Bank. I believe it was like homeowners insurance or something. And that's the last one.
Bonnie and Brittany have both spoken to the officer assigned to the case numerous times. We also had the opportunity to speak with him. We wanted to gain a better understanding of what efforts were being taken in Richie's case. We asked Detective Gates when he first came upon Richie's case.
We came aware of it, that Richie Collins was missing, when a North Cascade National Park ranger contacted us and stated that they located a vehicle in their campground parking lot at Colonial Creek, and it had been in the campground parking lot for 2 weeks. It was registered to Mr. Richie Collins out of Bellingham, and so we went and did a welfare check on Richie Collins' residence here in Bellingham, and he was not there. That's how we were made aware of it, and then we sent our deputies down. Sure enough, the car was registered to Richie Collins. It appeared to be abandoned. The keys were on the hood of the car, which was odd. And then the welfare check turned up that he wasn't at his residence.
Authorities searched Richie's home to see if they could find any evidence to point them in some kind of direction. Detective Gates told us more about what they found.
As far as making entry into his apartment, it appears that he left it in that condition, like he was going to be away from the house. The heat's turned down, the drapes were closed, the appliances appeared to be off. There's nothing suspicious, except for there is firearms missing from the house. Mr. Collins had a lot of firearms that he owned at one time per family members, and we don't know where they're at. We did run some pawn history where he did pawn some firearms, but it was like previous, 2016, 2017. I don't know the exact date, but he had previously pawned firearms, but family members indicated that he had upwards to 30 firearms, and they're unaccountable for at this time. And matter of fact, the fridge was pretty bare. That's the only thing that, for me, on the outside looking in, that's the only odd circumstance surrounding this case is where is his guns. The front door was locked. We had to use a key to get in. There's no forced entrance. There's nothing that looks like to be a struggle of any kind in there, in the residence.
We asked Detective Gates if there was anything specific that he wanted to share about Richie's case.
We are going to do some further searches up in the area of Colonial Creek, where he was, his vehicle was last seen. All we know at this point is his vehicle was found there. Is he in that area, or is it true that he just wants to be gone or missing, and he parked a car there and went somewhere else?
Detective Gates spoke briefly about the searches conducted for Richie. We wanted to know more about the terrain and area within North Cascades National Park, where Richie's car was found and where the searches for him took place. We were able to speak with Ranger Brandon Torres. We asked Ranger Torres if he could talk about the likelihood of finding an individual lost in a vast national park.
Statistically, the overwhelming, it's like 91-92%, as of wilderness search and rescue cases are solved within the first operational period, within the first 24 hours, right? We find people very quickly, or it's very hard, right? It's either one or the other. So, it's those, I think it was 8% of the cases, nationally go into an extended operational period search.
Ranger Torres told us about the discovery of Richie's car inside of the park and how that initiated their search efforts.
From the reports I read, it sounds like that park employees that were doing work up the Thunder Creek Trail on kind of extended And I'm not sure what their work was, and probably some vegetation trail work is what it sounded like. Saw this vehicle parked at the Colonial Creek campground parking area when they entered the wilderness, and then when they came out, you know, many days later, it was still there, and that's when it was reported. The car was found in a campground parking lot, and there's a trailhead area here, so there's a pretty big parking lot area outside of the campground, like you would imagine individual campsites, right? There's a parking lot at the beginning of this campground for folks that are either launching boats into Diablo Lake, or it's a pretty popular trailhead, the Thunder Creek Trail there. That's where the car was found. You got a mountain lake that's created by a reservoir, so kind of deep water lake surrounded by huge steep mountains and a glaciated valley that's separating these mountains, and that's the Thunder Creek drainage. And so there were several days of searching, and you know, in general, in something like this, what are you going to do? Like, you know, you wrap your heads around, okay, well, where are we going to look for this? The problem with this case, right, is that the lack of containment. What I mean by that is that if you get an initial missing and person report, you know, and it's, say it's been like 4 hours, the best strategy would be to contain that person's movement, right? And so, especially travel aids or roads, like set up kind of somebody at those points so that you keep the missing person within a certain area, and it makes the search effort much easier. That's the ticket, right? Is make the search area as small as you can. Given that when the report, you know, came in that these employees went up into the backcountry and came back out, you know, many, many days later, and the car is still there. So that's already, you know, days and days and days. So the theoretical search area based on somebody walking 2 to 3 miles per hour, if they were on foot, I mean, it's monstrous, right? It's a gazillion miles. It's like the whole state of Washington up into Canada. I mean, theoretically, how far could somebody walk? Also, given the problem that the car is right next to the highway, which is a, you know, huge travel corridor, so you could just get in a different car and go away, or get in a boat, things like that. There's almost no containment possibility for this search. So the initial actions for the search, when I looked at what they did, is they did what I would have done too, which was go search the attractive hazards. Are there places where, you know, somebody could have accidentally fallen over a guardrail, or, you know, there's some place where like people tend to go? And, you know, given that the folks were up and down the trail doing work, you know, the idea that somebody is just like there along a trail with a ankle or a leg injury and they just can't move and they're just waiting for somebody to come along. It's those kind of initial actions that you're taking. They kind of did those things, right? They kind of ruled out all that kind of like, well, let's search these local trails and local areas and the attractive hazards, and they didn't find anything.
Ranger Torres also touched on some oddities that were occurring at the park during the time of Richie's disappearance.
Another interesting thing about this case in particular, in this year, 2019, it's a very strange year for the lake level of Ross Lake. We have some cooperation with Customs and Border Patrol, especially when the level of Ross Lakes facilitates like boat traffic. In 2019, it didn't. The reservoir didn't fill. It was a super kind of dry winter. And really, the whole surface of the lake was so low that there was hardly any boat traffic. Like, I don't think you could launch a boat at Hozamine, which is people will be up in Canada, and there's a boat launch up at the Canadian border that you can get on to Ross Lake. There is no boat launch on the southern end. And I know I'm talking Ross Lake, and Diablo Lake was, you know, the lake is on, but there are trail corridors that get you up to Ross Lake. And there's the East Bank Trail that you can hike up into Canada from where he was, especially if you were to walk along the road or something like that for a while, or get a hitchhike. You look at the forest type and a lot of different types of a lot of different parts of the country, right? The Pacific Northwest in general, especially the west side, and this is the side of the range that we're on for this particular missing person incident, has really dense, crazy dense undergrowth beneath the forest canopy. So a lot of people, if you see pictures of people hiking in the Sierras, you can hike off trail much easier than you can in places like the Pacific Northwest. And people that do it, especially climbers, going off of, you know, established trails to get up to a peak, right? And these are epic bushwhacking journeys. It's like full body bushwhacking at times when there's some stuff called slide alder, where you're just like kind of rolling through it with your feet off the ground to try to get through this thick vegetation, because it's a lot of rain, right? All these storms are coming across the Pacific and hitting the mountains, and the orographic lifting is pushing these clouds up and over, so they lose their moisture. And so it's not rainforest. There is some on the Olympic Peninsula here in the North Cascades, but I mean, it's a ton of rain that just feeds a ton of vegetation. So thick vegetation down low. And then once you get up above tree line, you're dealing with glaciers and cliff bands and big rocks and big boulders from, you know, leftover ice age kind of glaciated peaks.
So from what we can gather from Ranger Torres, it sounds like the area is not only vast, but has a lot of vegetation. If Richie did go in there for whatever reason, there are countless places he could be. There are a lot of theories in this case, ranging from suicide to Richie taking off to live in the wilderness. Brittany told us about another theory they have considered.
When I talked to my aunt, I mean, we talked about all the possibilities. So she did mention a few times about maybe he had stopped something like at the border and it was gang related or something, and someone seeked revenge, or I don't know though. My personal best interest is finding where my dad is. That's my concern. And then after looking into like the Phoebe thing and the feet being pushed up, I thought someone for sure did something to him, right? It's just there's so many options. Honestly, I feel like most likely killed himself. The second most likely thing is someone killed him. I think there's like a 5-10% chance that he's alive. I don't know, surviving. I don't know, maybe it'll be a little different now, but in the beginning when you're so emotional and it's really hard to communicate what you want to say and everything you want to say when it's just so much to handle emotionally and mentally and physically, all of it, spiritually. And like every time like I come up with a theory, there's something that contradicts it. If he went to go kill himself, he wouldn't have brought all of his guns. So they're somewhere and we don't know where they are.
There are so many oddities surrounding the disappearance of Richie Collins. From the neighbor's sightings to the missing guns and his fascination with survival tactics. Each new piece of information brings about a whole new theory as to what could have possibly happened to him. What we do know is that Richie's last financial transaction was during the first week of March. His last Facebook message was on March 11th. Richie's sister became concerned on April 4th and tried to contact him but was unable to reach Richie. She called around and found that no one else had heard from him either, so his brother Randy tried to report him missing, and the police went out to do a welfare check. That's when a neighbor claimed to have seen him 4 days prior. His sister tried reporting him missing a second time, and again they said they went out and did a welfare check. They also said they spoke to the neighbor that time too, and she reported seeing him again 4 days prior. Because of this sighting, a missing persons report was not filed. On April 30th, a missing persons report was finally filed because park rangers had reported his abandoned vehicle. They said that Richie's Honda Element had been there for a couple of weeks. One concerning thing about the discovery of the car was that the seat was pushed all the way up, like a short person was driving it, but Richie was 6'1". There are other odd things in the car, including a note stating that his former coworker had permission to drive his car across the Canadian border. Disposable gloves, a box cutter, and a map of the Cascade Mountains. His daughter Brittany told us that she doesn't believe that Richie would have made it far in the wilderness because he had a bad knee and other medical conditions. When Richie's home was searched, it only added to the mystery. It appeared that Richie didn't have immediate plans to return. The drapes were drawn, the refrigerator was empty, and the heat had been turned down. One of the most bizarre things was that Richie's very large gun collection went missing, along with large amounts of ammo. On top of that, Richie had an interest in survival skills and was known to keep canned food and dried food. The refrigerator only had some water and a jar of survival seeds inside. The house also had sleeping bags, binoculars, knives, and scopes. There were books found about emergency management and survival skills. Is it possible that Richie just drove to the park on his own and took his own life or got lost? If so, what happened to all of those guns? Did someone ditch his car at the campground to throw off the investigation? Could he be out there somewhere living off the land? There are just so many theories to consider that without more evidence, how do you even figure out where to start looking? Sadly, shortly after we interviewed Richie's sister Bonnie, she passed away, never knowing what happened to her brother, Richie. Brittany is now carrying on the search for her father and is determined to find answers. At the time of his disappearance, Richie Collins was 58 years old. He stood at 6'1" tall and weighed around 275 pounds. He also has brown eyes and brown hair. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of Richie Collins, you're asked to contact Detective Ken Gates at 360-778-6613.
I'm just devastated because we don't know what happened to him. And I feel so bad that I didn't call him before that time. You know, maybe it wouldn't have made any difference. But I honestly, in my heart of hearts, do not believe they committed suicide. I believe something happened to him.
It blows my mind in 2019 when this happened. I thought they could just like track his phone easily. It would have pinpointed him to where he was, where he went. You know what I mean? I thought it would be easy, and not realizing, I guess, one of the things is that people have rights. People have the right to disappear, whatever that means. And I understand that in the sense because I am a survivor. So I think any survivor that wants to disappear, so I get it from that standpoint. But when the last thing that he said to someone on text was to check in with a coworker, and he didn't check in with her, and she said he was very negative and out of sorts and all these red flags, that's what blows my mind, was there's so many red flags and still nothing more could have been done sooner. It's been 2 years.
When we left off at the end of Richie's episode, there were so many questions remaining. During the July 4th weekend of 2021, some children playing at a campground several miles from where Richie's car was abandoned discovered the first clue that would help find Richie, one of his missing guns. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 303 of The Vanished, an update on Richie Collins' story. The last time we spoke with Richie's daughter, Brittany, was just months after she had learned that her dad had been reported missing, but nearly a year after he had actually disappeared. We caught up with Brittany for an update on her dad, since his remains were located earlier this year, and asked her to go back over with us what was going on at that time when we originally aired her dad's story.
I haven't really talked about this besides like with my mom once and like my fiance a little bit, you know? So he disappeared in April, but remember, I didn't find out he was missing until 5 months later, and no one ever contacted me, nothing. So that really upset me. Like, there's an article in the Bellingham Herald that says, I think it says missing father, I'm not sure, but there's nothing in it about me or the guns or anything. And so like I contacted them trying to get them to do a follow-up. They just ignored me. They would respond to my emails and then they ignored me. Also in the article, it was like, this says Whatcom County Sheriff exhausted all their leads. And it was like, no one ever contacted me though. So that was wild.
Once Brittany found out Richie was missing, she looked for help at every avenue, but couldn't seem to get any attention for her dad's case and wasn't sure what law enforcement was doing to look for him.
It was just like everything was working against me. And I had to beg the media to cover a story. No one ever did. I was writing on their Facebook walls. I was reaching out on Twitter, everything. And finally I got him on the news. And then the podcast was everything. Just to be able to tell the whole story and all the facts. My aunt being able to tell everything she knew, because she was the one that dealt with the investigation and all this happening before I even knew. When we first talked, especially the first, very first interview that we did, I didn't really want to talk about myself. I tried to keep it on my dad because I didn't want it to be about myself. But then the second time we talked, it ties the whole story in, right? Our relationship, why I'm the one fighting for this, why we weren't close. It affects me. And I'm the one out here trying to get coverage, trying to keep his name out here, making a Facebook post, going on Web Sleuths, talking to people on there, doing whatever I could, spamming news section, comment sections with my dad's missing. I did a lot.
At the time we first talked to Brittany, we also interviewed her aunt Bonnie, who tragically passed away while the original episode was being produced. And Brittany told us about how important Bonnie was to her.
After my aunt passed away, oh my God, that was so crazy. It was just really hard because that was the one person I could talk to every day about it. And we talked, you know, I don't know, at some point you can't, I have my fiance and I have my mom and stuff like that, but talking about it all the time, but she was the one person I could talk to about it all the time. She wanted to know just as bad as I did what happened to him or where he was. And so it was just so sudden too. And it was just really hard. I really missed her. And the thing is about her is like I talked about last time, like me and my dad weren't close. But the memories that I do have with them, most of them include my aunt either like calling her when I was with him or going to visit her. And my uncle passed away too after my aunt. And so it's just been a lot. And then coronavirus on top of it, it's just been a lot.
Brittany has been through so much in her life and certainly never expected her father to disappear, but told us that despite the distance in their relationship, she has always wanted to be closer to her dad.
He had reached out to me on my birthday every year, but that was basically it. It was something that I wanted, yeah. And it just was, I had so much going on trying to get myself and my life together, and it was on the list of things to do, of course. I've always wanted a relationship with them, and even now, talking with my fiance about it, just how shitty it is, just how I wish like me and him could have a relationship instead of this is how everything happened. My whole life got flipped upside down and I lost myself for a while and I had to step away because I was going to drive myself crazy trying to find answers and feeling like I was doing everything and nothing was working.
The months continued to pass and Richie's case fell off the priority list as law enforcement dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic, with Washington emerging as one of the first hotspots in early 2020. But Brittany continued to hold out hope that her dad would be found, though like many other families in her situation, she never expected the call that she finally got.
I planned on, I accepted, I may not ever know. I may not ever find him. The North Cascades, that terrain and the magnitude and the time that went, you know, the time he went missing to when anyone realized he was missing was so long. I tried everything I could. I had to accept that I may not ever know. Or I said, I'm going to get a call randomly when I least expect it. And I was thinking 15 years down the line when I'm having lunch or something, not this summer, you know? So this is what happens. It was on July 4th, I got a call and she said, some kids were at this place that's called 4th of July Campground in North Cascades National Park, about 5 miles southeast of Colonial Creek Campground. And they found his gun and they hid it. And then they went and got, and God bless these kids for doing this. They went and got someone, they hid the gun and got someone, and they found his gun. And so I got this call and she was like, I was debating if I was going to call you or not. She's like, I just had to. She's like, I've been following your dad's case. I've listened to the podcast and I can't tell you how many people, especially people that my dad worked with at Border Patrol, people who have served with my dad, they've all family and obviously people who I've never met. A lot of your viewers and a lot of people have messaged me, left me comments. So nice and so supportive. Seriously, like just the nicest messages. Not one person at any point has been rude, has said anything nasty. Just been, I've gotten like the best messages and comments and support from so many people, and that honestly helped kept me going a lot. She's like, I just had to call you. And she told me the kids on the gun and that they're going to do a search tomorrow on Monday. And so I waited all day and I thought, you know what? They might not even find anything today. It might be a week. It could be months. Who knows? Just to not get my hopes up. She called me around the same time as the night before. And she said, we found your dad's remains. And she listed his wallet, his dog tags. His IDs were in his wallet, obviously. So something about he had some coins. And when she said some of your dad's remains, I was like, okay. And then she started listing all that. I was like, oh, they just found his clothes, but not him. And I asked her and she's like, no, I was like, when you said remains, did you find him? And she's like, yeah, we found some of his human remains, but they didn't find his skull. I think she was a ranger who called me. She was like the team leader. And then it was like 8 people, I think with National Park Services in Whatcom County. And I just want to, I really appreciate them. I can't imagine, first of all, in the summer, and they had, I think, fires going on in Eastern Washington. So the smoke, I think, was around that time. I can only fathom the hike, how deep it is and intense it is. And then off path, because I think she said it was like 200 yards off path at the actual campground. And I know that terrain is insane. And so they were there for all day searching. And I'm so grateful. And I know that they searched their hardest and they got all of that stuff.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. At the time, Brittany was grappling with the recovery of her father's remains and the grieving process, but she told us that she didn't realize that the fact that her father's remains were incomplete would complicate the identification process and investigation.
Well, because his skull's missing, so that might be really hard to determine a cause of death. And I know that they found some of his remains. I have no idea how many or which ones. It was in the same general area. I think it was all together. I'm not exactly sure. But it was enough to where Detective Gates said that the coroner would do like a preliminary death certificate. Right around when we were talking in December, when I met with him, Detective Gates, around that time, like, I had been paying attention to missing persons cases. And I cannot tell you how many that I found where a foot would wash up on shore and stuff like that. And so I asked Detective Gates when I met with him if he would take my DNA, God forbid anything like that ever happened. So he did in December. So thank God I did that way back then, you know? And so now they have to send the remains to Texas, get them tested. So when I talked to him, I was like, it's going to be a long time. And he was like, yeah, but they are going to wait, just have everything confirmed. When I talked to him, it made it sound like, obviously, they had to get everything verified through testing, but that the coroner would do an initial death certificate, a preliminary death certificate, where it's basically they can presume that it's him. Of course, they're going to confirm it, but they can. That's what I was kind of waiting for. I haven't heard anything. And he did say, like, I would get his stuff back, like his wallet and stuff, in like a month, but I haven't heard anything.
These were unexpected bumps that Brittany hadn't expected to encounter once her dad was found, and she had hoped that the discovery of his remains would bring answers. But instead, she only had more questions. We asked her what she was feeling after that initial call.
So when I first got the call about the gun, first, let's talk about that, because that was the first thing. I was in shock. For like 24 hours, I was just in shock. I felt, I don't know, but when she told me, it was shock, sadness, but also happiness and a huge sense of relief. And then that triggered my guilt. And thank God I told myself, I said, because I felt really guilty about a bunch of things, about that I felt happy and relieved that he was dead, but that's not what it is. You're relieved that they found him and that you don't have to live your rest of your life going crazy. That relief and happiness, that went away the next day. And I felt nauseous, sick to my stomach. I couldn't get out of bed, which was really scary because I've been really depressed before in my life where I didn't get out of bed. So the next day I was like, I have to get up. And I was just really nauseous, like extremely nauseous. And then on the third day was when I had cried, but the third day is when I like broke down and burst into tears once like the initial shock wore off. And then that dragged on for 2 weeks where I was just nauseous, really nauseous and sad. It just made it real. It made it, he was not going to be here, can't have a relationship with, like, if he was out there living and he came back, we could have had a relationship now, you know, things could have been different. And then also that guilt wasn't just about being happy and stuff like that. I felt guilty because I wish, and every family deserves to know that.
Despite her immense grief, Brittany found strength in continuing to pursue answers for Richie while she waits for DNA to confirm that the remains found were indeed his. One thing that troubled her was that only one firearm was recovered. But as you heard in the original episode, Richie had many that were missing from his home. Brittany told us that this was a big deal to her, even when her dad was still missing.
I want them to find the truth, and I hope they can. But with his school missing, that's... But also, he was like, well, now that we have this, we have more authority and more investigative authority to look into this. And I said, well, great. Are you going to look at his phone records? And he said, no. They basically said there's no evidence of anything. There's no evidence of a crime. They got a tip, something about a storage unit. And he asked me, and I said, no. And I was like, well, the only thing I can think of outside of Bellingham, you know what I mean, is for like a year or two, he lived in Tacoma. And I got the apartment that he stayed at and the storage units nearby. So I gave him that, but I haven't heard anything bad about that. There's only been one gun found. Where are the guns? And that's another reason why, like, I put an emphasis on the guns was, A, to get more attention. Well, first of all, it's the facts. And to get more attention, public safety. And they were possibly stolen. We didn't know, you know. There's just a lot. And so where are the guns? So I'm just grateful that he was found. It's sad because, first of all, I don't feel like I could grieve yet. I have a little bit, and I'm grateful that they found some of him and his stuff. So like I could kind of start the grieving process, but at the same time, we still don't have answers yet. And hopefully with the investigation, like I said, that just blows my mind that, okay, now we have the more legal authority to investigate. Okay, so are you going to look at his text messages? No. Like, what? Detective Gates was very kind. He took my DNA when I asked him. But, and it's not him. I don't believe it's a Detective Gates thing. I think it's a systemic thing with missing people that there's not a lot people can do because for whatever reason, like I said, I understand from the domestic violence, someone fleeing and stuff like that. But when there's red flags that someone's missing, that should automatically allow a little bit of leeway, right? Well, there's no evidence of a crime. Well, how do you know there's no evidence of a crime if you haven't investigated or looked at anything or taken fingerprints?
We asked Brittany what she thinks happened to her dad, and she told us that while she leans toward one specific outcome, she also continues to press for a full investigation that will look into some of the stranger aspects of his disappearance.
Because I've always said that I felt like strongly that he could have been murdered or it was suicide. And now I'm leaning more towards suicide. But because of the lack of communication and investigation and me not being close with my dad and not knowing the whole situation and learning everything all at once and going through the emotions, it was really difficult to try and piece things together. First of all, I wouldn't get any questions answered. And when I did, it only gave me 500 million more questions. And that's the part that drives you crazy. Think of all the options. And that's where that relief I felt came in because I wouldn't have to deal with this anymore. And every family deserves that. If he was murdered, it would have had to have been first of all, it would have been more than one person in like a really big conspiracy. You know what I mean? I mean, it's possible, I guess, but there's no evidence of that. Because I remember the big thing too is the safe being pride. And from my understanding, I think I asked him and he said that it's how you know. You didn't test the mallet and the crowbar, but he said that basically, and I didn't know because I didn't really mess with much when I was there, but the safe's door was like kind of jammed, I guess, or like it could get stuck basically in the bleach and the clothes in the dryer. And then that makes me think of the things that made me think of suicide was just everything that she had said about his state of mind before, very negative and out of sorts. And something that too was, I never knew until I listened to the podcast when my aunt said that in his car there was an empty bratwurst like wrapper and that my dad did not eat that, but their dad did. And to me, that sounded like a last meal. Even way back then, I thought that when I heard her say that, I was like, that sounds like a last meal, like eating something like your dad loved or something. I don't know that. And then first of all, anything could be a possibility because we don't have any answers. But now, from my opinion and from what I know, it to me, it feels like a suicide, but I don't know. Hopefully they can investigate for real. And then that's another thing is like, I try and like not bother people and blow them up and stuff. But then if you don't, if you're not on it, are they even doing anything, you know? So I don't know. It's just, it's such a bizarre experience to go through. It really is. I don't think anybody can blame me for feeling like red flag, red flag, red flag. This is not right. Something happened here that is not right. And he deserves that. Everybody deserves that. If he was murdered, there's killers on the loose that need to be arrested and in jail. It's dangerous, horrible. And if it was suicide, it's very common for military and for law enforcement to take their own lives because of the trauma, the stress, the PTSD. Obviously, I think we all can recognize what they go through and what they give up and what they risk.
Brittany will have to wait until DNA confirms her dad's identity in order to lay him to rest. But she said that she's been carefully considering how to honor his life.
I've never, ever been good at grief or death or funerals or anything like that. I've always ran away, didn't deal with it, suppressed it, or most of my life I was on drugs, so I never dealt with it. You know what I mean? So this is the first time I've been going through something raw. I have been in contact with someone that he worked with and throughout this whole thing. And after they had found him, she wanted to do like an announcement or something or a tribute or a memorial in honor of him, something for CBP, like to send it out in a newsletter or something. But we can't do any of that because nothing has been, like, we don't even know what happened or if it's him for sure, 100%. They had to verify it, even though it is him. So as far as memorial, I have no idea. So I wanted, to me, I don't want to bury him here because first of all, I'm the only family member here. And he did, I mean, besides me, I think him living here was the only reason why he lived here. And I didn't know that before. So that broke my heart. I think my aunt kind of was the one that made me realize that and said that he only stayed here because I was here. So I don't want him buried here. And I hate cremation, but it was the only thing I could think of because I was going to say, oh, I could have him in an urn and do like a, like with this picture, like a memorial thing. And then I talked with my mom. Thank God. She kind of helped me realize that instead of doing that, something way more meaningful would be at Arlington National Cemetery. I knew my dad had served this country a lot and done a lot. But really looking through it and even reading just, the Afghanistan, when he was there, he helped them with Border Patrol, helping them secure their border and how they can protect their border and all that stuff.
While Brittany waits for answers and the chance to give her dad a proper burial, she's hard at work on her own life, healing and working on her health and living a full life.
Thank God I listen to every episode of your podcast and all other people in missing persons cases and really listen to every single experience. And obviously so many different people, different backgrounds. And then all of these families and friends or whoever are left begging for answers. And sometimes the cops and the media, they do a fantastic job, right? They do everything right. They put all their resources in. But I think, and that's what I thought, right? That's what happens for missing persons cases. And the hard reality of it is that's not the case where more people, even my dad's case, not getting a ton of coverage. I got what, you know, I could. Some people don't even have as much as that. Like, there's cases that you guys report on all the time. It's the first time I've ever heard of it. And there's not much research out there. You know what I mean? And so going through this, I learned, first of all, that detectives don't answer questions. They are trying to get answers. They ask the questions, that not a lot is done. And it's really, first of all, it's wrong. It's heartbreaking. And it's just not right. Yeah, I've been through a lot of trauma too. A lot of trauma, but it could have broke me, but I'm still here, right? I mean, I have a lot of work to do, but I'll get there. I have hope, and that is what you need. And when you're going through this, especially, it's not that I gave up hope, but to not drive myself crazy, you want to be the most realistic you can and go off of proof and not of all these wild theories and stuff, even though there was a lot of things that pointed in my dad's case, foul play that really I thought for a while that was a big possibility. And all that stuff drives you crazy. And I had to, for my sanity, I had to get it together and think, especially now after we found out everything, what makes the most sense, most logic.
As we come to the end of this update, we still don't have many answers. We don't know with 100% certainty that the remains recovered were Richie, since they weren't able to recover his skull. A dental comparison was out of the question. Brittany continues to wait for DNA results, but she does believe the remains are her father, because the items found along with the remains, including his wallet, ID, dog tags, and gun. There has also been no cause of death established at this time. The 4th of July camp area where the remains were recovered is a several-mile hike from the parking lot where Richie's car was found. You would have to take the Thunder Creek Trail and then get on the 4th of July trail where there's a steep ascent over the next couple of miles. The area is known for its stunning views, but it also seems unlikely that someone would hike miles into the mountains to murder someone or hide a body. Could Richie have gone out there for a hike and had a medical emergency, or perhaps chose to end his life? We may never know the answer. We also know that there were some strange things in Richie's home, and also things missing from his home that have never been found. Does this point to a possible mental health issue worsening in the lead up to his disappearance? Today, everyone is still wondering what happened to all of Richie's guns. And finding out what happened to the guns might give us some insight into Richie's mental state at the time he went missing. For Brittany, she remains thankful that those kids found that gun, which led to the recovery of what they believe to be Richie's remains. If you have any information about the disappearance and death of Richie Collins, please contact Detective Ken Gates at 360-778-6613. Or contact the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office directly at 360-778-6600.
I'm so thankful that right before all this went down, I was literally doing the best I've ever been. I was happy. We were traveling. We just bought a truck. We were camping. We just thought everything was great. And then when this happened, literally since then, it's just been really rough, but at the same time, and then coronavirus too, but making my health and my happiness, even when everything is falling down around me, my number one priority, because at the end of the day, all anyone has is ourselves. We have to take care of our bodies and our minds, or we can't help other people either, you know? It's just really important to take care of yourself. And so I just can't fathom, if I was on drugs, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. My priorities would have been a lot different. And to be able to go through all this and still at the end of the day not destroy myself, that's been my biggest thing. Because when I spent a year trying to get anything, find him, I really lost myself. And it was really hard, but to love myself enough and respect myself a way to be like, you did everything you could. You know, like, this isn't your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. You tried everything. And I just knew that I couldn't destroy myself, and I love myself today. You know what I mean? Like, I never had that before, and I respected myself and loved myself that everything else going on in the world, like, I can't. I have to protect myself and my energy and my health.
That brings us to the end of episode 303. I'd like to thank Brittany for coming back and speaking with us for this update. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Louisiana. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.